Good morning, honorable member.
Good morning, honorable chair.
Fine.
Good morning, honorable chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, honorable chair.
Morning, honorable premier. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to welcome everyone present to this portfolio committee meeting today. Honorable members, during recess, one of our members, Honorable Joyce Maluleke, passed on. May her soul rest in peace. Let me take this opportunity to call for all our members in the committee to observe a moment of silence in her honor. Thank you very much, honorable members. We have received a number of apologies for today's portfolio committee meeting. Let me register all of them. We have received an apology from Honorable Minister Lodro, Honorable Komani, Honorable Motsepe, Honorable Tsebekulu, Honorable Gondwe, Honorable Malatsi, and Honorable Sidisi. Honorable members, on this number of apologies may render our portfolio committee not correct. Let me check that with the secretary of the committee, Ms. Pole. Is my assertion correct that given these numbers, the meeting may not correct? Can I check that with you, Ms. Pole?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. The business of the day for the committee can proceed because there's no decision that will be taken. Except at the end, Chairperson, I'm just looking at the numbers. I think members that are here are six, meaning which we will correct to adopt the report at the end, Chairperson. So the committee does correct.
Well, it does correct now. Okay, yes. Thank you very much. I was... looking at the numbers before, I was so worried that we may not correct. I'm happy, therefore, that our meeting is now correcting. Honorable members, on the 2nd of June, the committee had received a presentation from the Public Service Commission on the financial misconduct in the public service for the 2019-2020 financial year. On the very same day, we afforded Honorable Member Kruger an opportunity to introduce his private member's bill, The Ease of Doing Business. The Public Service Commission report has flagged the State Security Agency and the following departments in the Northwest Province: Office of the Premier, Department of Education, and Department of Health, as having failed to submit records on financial misconduct. The committee has written to the flagged department. Northwest Province has submitted consolidated presentation. However, the State Security Agency has written a letter to my attention citing their reasons not to attend the meeting. We can discuss the content of the letter at a later stage and clarify each other on the merits of their arguments. The committee has further extended the invitation to the Department of Public Service and Administration on the progress made regarding the establishment of the Technical Assistance Unit, its successes and failures. Lastly, we are going to adopt the committee report on the proposed bill by Honorable Kruger. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Maskole, can you fly to the agenda so that we go to the next item on the agenda?
Okay, Joseph. Agenda. Okay. I'm putting it through now, Chair.
Okay.
Can you see, Chair?
Yes, I can see it. Why, it's very small. Let me try to increase. Okay.
Yes, same, but in a nutshell, Chairperson, we
will ask the Northwest, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, briefing by
the following department in the Northwest. But before that, I think let me afford the Honorable Premier an opportunity to make his opening remarks before the presentations are made. Honorable Premier Mokhoro.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Trying to think that, yes. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Firstly, as a province, we are concerned about the extent of financial misconduct. We are committed to making sure that these are rooted out, as the misconduct cases that we have seen over the past years impact very strongly on our efforts to alleviate poverty. Honorable members would have seen over the past weeks, months, efforts by the law enforcement agencies, both at provincial as well
as... Honorable Premier, can you hold a bit? I see that Honorable Lesom has raised their hand. Can I check that hand from Honorable Lesom?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and colleagues and Honorable Premier. No, I'll step down, Chair. I'll wait for the opportunity because I missed it earlier on, not to disrupt the flow of the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You may continue, Honorable Premier.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The recent gaps in terms of our compliance with regard to making the necessary submissions, I highly regret it, and I think to this date we have made the necessary corrections, and as a result we will be in a position to report in respect of the three departments you mentioned, Honorable Chair. We certainly are concerned, particularly in respect of those departments where very huge amounts are involved and recovery has not really taken place to the extent that it should. But we continue to intensify our efforts, both in terms of recovery as well as in terms of the work that law enforcement agencies and consequence management are concerned. And at this point, let me, through your permission, Chairperson, call on the Director General to give the details of the report as required by the Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. You may take the floor, Director General.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the Premier, and colleagues on the platform. Chair, I will request that the presentation be flagged on the screen, and it will be conducted by the Deputy Director General Buti Chuma on behalf of the three departments, as you've indicated, Chair. And I may as well, Chair, preface before he takes over, with your permission, preface the presentation by apologizing that the three departments did not appear in the report of the Public Service Commission. That was largely because of some technical glitches between the officials, but the information has always been there. We must apologize for that. Chair, I may also indicate that after delivering the presentation to the Portfolio Committee, yesterday the management contacted the Secretariat. Management contacted the Secretariat, Honorable Chair, just to check on the sufficiency of the information as received, having compared it with the letter that we received from the Secretariat of the Committee. The letter basically, Honorable Chair, referred to financial misconduct only, but the discussion yesterday with the Secretariat indicated that we should include additional information with regard to the financial disclosures as well as the suspensions. And therefore, we had to quickly gather that information, which we have now deposited with the Secretariat this morning. We took the approach, Honorable Chair, that says better late than never. So there is supplementary information in addition to the presentation, which deals with matters of financial disclosure as well as suspensions within the province. With that having been said, Chair, may I hand over, with your permission, to the DDG to take us through the presentation. DDG Chuma.
You may take the floor, DDG Chuma.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Premier, Director General. The presentation is not yet on. I can't see it from my side. I may also have to push it from, without having to see it from the screen, if it can be available from that, from me on my gadget this side. Honorable Chair, the purpose of this presentation is to brief the Portfolio Committee on the Public Service and Administration on the financial misconduct cases for both 2019-20 and 2021 financial years with regard to the Department of Education, Department of Health, and Office of the Premier in the Northwest Province. The Department of Education had 5 cases of financial misconduct, 5 officials, and these cases are all at different levels of conclusion, with carrying a different amount of money in it. On the supplementary information, I will be taking the portfolio committee on the status of each and every case that involves a lot of money and that must be recovered, especially those cases where they either concluded, and what is it that the department is doing in relation to making sure that the government is able to recover on its cases. I'm not particularly sure, Chairperson, Honorable Chair, that I should be going through each and every individual, because the presentation as it was distributed, it is captured in the template that is provided for by the Public Service Commission. In the template, we identify the name of an individual, the rank that the person occupies, the gender, the salary level, the amount involved, and we also go further to indicate if the amount of money has been recovered or not, the sanction as it has been imposed, and the findings of the disciplinary inquiry if it has been concluded. In an event where cases are still ongoing, the template reflects on the outer part the comments and the reasons for no recoveries. When I deal with the supplementary, I will go deep into the Department of Education and explain further how far we are in terms of the identified officials who have transgressed the law. When we move to the Department of Health, the transgressors range from salary level to salary level 16, and all of these cases are also at different levels, including different amount of money involved. I will also be able to explain in details all the information contained on the presentation within the template. Also reflects what was the nature of the transgression. If a case has been concluded, what were the findings? And you would actually realize, notice that in the Department of Health, the colleagues, the officials who are basically involved, there's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of them. Out of the 11 of them, we are able to report as it is that 3 of them have been found guilty, although the processes are at different level of interaction in terms of recouping the money, if any, and the others are still in process. Similarly, we'll also be able to do that. Most of the challenges that we have been experiencing across all these cases, you would realize that between the Department of Health and Education, most of the cases have actually been delayed in terms of conclusion, particularly because in certain instances, the chairperson of the hearing either pulls out at the time when the sitting has to occur. In certain instances, the transgressors are not available because of different reasons, but largely due to ill health, as reported. In terms of the Office of the Premier, we had 2 cases, and both of the cases have been concluded. One official has been dismissed, and the other official was found guilty, and with 1 month suspension without pay, and back at work. Now, if I have to go to the supplementary, through your permission, Chairperson, if it's allowed, just to give more details on the issues as we intend to deal with them, especially on the issue of recovering the monies that are left behind for the state. The supplementary issues does not only get limited to the recoveries of the money in relation to the cases. They also involve the information on the financial disclosure framework. So in terms of the disclosures for the three departments, as it were, financial year 2019-20, the Department of Office of the Premier and the Department of Education and Health. Department of Office of the Premier 1920 reported 100% in terms of disclosures, so was the Department of Education. The Department of Health reported 96%. And the reason why the Department of Health reported 96% during the financial year in question was particularly because the officials who got appointed came late when the system already closed. But we, however, requested concession and it was granted. Therefore, in that financial year 2019-20, the Department of Health also reported 100%. Even if the statistics on the system shows 96%, it's at the time when the closure of the system happened, and then we would obviously go with what is within the system at that point in time. During the next financial year coming, all the departments, health, education, and office of the premier, reported 100% in terms of the disclosures. In our discussion as management, we also deem it necessary to be able to explain that the department ensures that with the financial disclosure framework, we collaborate with Department of Public Service and Administration to provide the necessary training on workshops, targeting the ethics officers within provincial departments. For each year, before the commencement of the financial disclosure period, we do run across the province and raise awareness to all officials within provincial departments. And I think it's also important for us to mention that each and every provincial department has got an ethics officer that enables us to collaborate with them and make sure that the workshops on making SMS members familiar with the disclosure system takes place and the assistance happens as and when it's actually required with regards to that space. We have been experiencing some challenges, of course, in terms of disclosures with regard to middle management services level. But we are pushing closely to that because currently we are standing at 60% as such in terms of compliance. But this is largely due to the fact that most of the middle management services level, due to the incapacity to engage freely with the e-disclosure and also to assist in that respect, they have not come to the power for us to be able to record 100% as it were. We still yet to see the outcome of the recent financial year because we have made great strides in ensuring that we increase our workshops and our interaction with middle management, with middle managers, so that we are able to register 100% of the outcomes in the current financial year. Coming back to the financial misconduct in relation to the Department of Education, Mr. Mitswamire, who was found guilty in terms of mismanagement of funds, close to 52,300 rand. He is currently paying back the amount of money as it has been deducted from his salary. We are expecting him to pay back full amount of money by the end of August 2021. In relation to Mr. Bosoku JML, the case has been opened with Itusem Police Station. Case number is therefore provided for. In relation with the financial mismanagement amounting to 1,244,734.48. And Mr. Morobe JM, who is sitting as the principal as well, with a case of fraud and forgery amounting to 1,246,721.48, is currently undergoing disciplinary processes. Ms. V. Nkateng, as you have noted in the presentation on the slide, that the case has actually been dragging because she's been on a very long extended sick leave. However, she's now back at work and the case, the proceedings has actually resumed in relation to that. Ms. Triple M Mujumi's case of financial mismanagement of 1,580,270.56, the investigation is still underway and hoping to be concluded as well as soon as possible. We had cases in the Department of Health. In the Department of Health cases, the former HOD, who was charged with fraud and financial mismanagement, amounting to the recovery of 30 million rand that was lost to Mediosa, is now in preservation of his pension, and as such has been done by the Special Tribunal. And the case is before the SIU, the Special Investigating Unit, to proceed and see how best it will go around in terms of recouping the amount of money owed to the state. In terms of the director capital planning, no recovery has been made as yet, as the arbitration is partially heard. With regards to, because that matter is basically before the Public Health, Social Development and Sectoral Bargaining Council of Mr. Chobotwane, who is the director on capital planning. The senior provisioning and administrative officer, Ms. B. Mulamu, has been dismissed. However, she has lodged an appeal to the executive authority. And pending the outcomes of the review, arbitration, the department will decide on the recovery of the state monies. In conclusion, it's for us to note that the matter in relation to the Office of the Premier about NEPO, the matter is before the Directorate of Priority Crime Investigations, SAPS. The outcome of such will also be able to guide us in terms of the recoup of money that is would be owed to the state. Honorable Chair, it's important for me to note that in an event wherein any department has not achieved 100% in financial disclosures, the Office of the Premier raises such matters with relevant accounting officers to take necessary actions, primarily to undertake a consequence management. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much, Premier. And thank you very much, DG and members of the Portfolio Committee. That is the end of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I now open discussions by the committee. Those who want to make a contribution may do so by showing their hands on the platform. I see Honorable Kibi. Honorable Kibi.
Yes, good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and colleagues. Honorable Chair, excuse me for not showing my video. I'm totally not feeling well. But I just want to hear from the presenter on the issue of health. I think what we heard here from the presenter is that there's a total amount insured on financial misconduct. It's about 45 million, and that may not be recovered. Why and how? And also, on average, how long does the department take to complete disciplinary cases, considering the merits of each and every case? At least they need to know how long they would take, because we are concerned about cases that are dragging for too long. And also there is I want to know in total how many cases of financial misconduct did the department have in 2019-20 and 2021 financial years, of a total of 9 pending cases mentioned on slide 8. Chairperson, also with regards to employee who is facing 96 counts of financial misconduct, and currently declared as medically disposed. Was the official declared medically indisposed during the course of disciplinary proceedings, or is it something that happened prior the disciplinary process? Is the official also suspended with full pay or not? Because in most cases, people are being suspended with pay, whilst there is also somebody that is acting on their behalf, and later on finding the department really losing a lot of money. My last one is, why does the department allow the cases to drag over for more than 90 days? Because cases are taking too long. And I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable KB. Honorable Soma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and colleagues. Good morning once more, and the Honorable Premier. Chair, allow me to start with the first issue that I initially raised my hand for, if I may do so. And of course, I'll be guided by you, but I'll raise it so that you can guide me. That in your opening remarks, which were not necessary for discussions, but it must be recorded that I went and represent the portfolio committee at Maluleka's funeral a few weeks back. Because Parliament did pay for me for that traveling. So I thought I must just register it for record purposes. Secondly, Chair, may her soul rest in peace with her better half. Secondly, Chair, I think if this one is a sheer omission from your side, but I'm not stealing the thunder from your side, is the new ministers and the DMs that have joined us, which one is happy that they are not new in the space of public service and administration. As you acknowledge the DM, it had first meeting with the portfolio committee, and I'm doing that on your behalf because I could notice that it's just a sheer oversight to emphasize that point. Having said that, Chair, may I then go to the subject matter of the day that we are not, Honorable Premier, piggybacking at your province, but we have promised ourselves that we'll ensure that there are fewer departments or provinces after we have highlighted them, informed by the AG's report and also public service report, that we are going to make them account and also monitor their progress in those areas that we believe that there has been maladministration that involves finances in particular. That's one. Chair, two on the same, which is B on the same point, is that we would like at all at our best to do and to ensure that we assist the country and government not to recycle officials where they do the wrong on this side or any sphere of government. They get themselves probably local government from national government and so forth, but also even the poor performing senior management in particular, but informed by a robust departmental or sphere of government performance assessment. I think, Chair, on those three A and B and C points, for me, they will be very important for all of us to appreciate why we are doing that. That's what we are doing. Two, Chair. Firstly, is that in my two, is that Honorable Kibi have covered me in terms of the 45 million. But also, I will add that which I would like through the administration and through the submission of the province, through the Office of the Premier, that we get a sort of a helicopter view or a survey that informs us the standard and the appetite of paying the service providers within 30 days, in particular to those officials concerned, because you'll be surprised that maybe there's no relationship with the two. And that is a very serious issue for me, because we are killing these small companies that they take benefit through tenders from government, if we are not. But I'm saying, Chair, one would be very excited to see the patterns vis-a-vis the 45 million and payment of service providers. The third one, Chair, which I really appreciate, Chair, that the province also having observed that the letter that was written through your office didn't cover most of the things, but they took trouble to add some of the points that they thought that the committee would have of interest on it. We really appreciate that one, because we're not just looking within the box, but we're more around anything that involved financial misconduct, as it were, notwithstanding the information that we have received. And also we appreciate, Chair, which I'm sure all of us colleagues will agree, that we are being encouraged the naming and shame, which I'm sure it will deter other officials not to do so. Of course, the reports from Public Service Commission, it tends to be a public information, but having elevated it at this forum, I think even these officials, they will repent. If there's still room to repent, hopefully there is. The fourth point, Chair, I think it's coupled with the Honorable Kibi raised in terms of the 45M, that we'd like that project of paying back the unduly money that you benefited, you pay back to the state so that it can be used for proper bettering the lives of our people. The fifth one, Chair, my apology if I might be long. Of the timeline tracking of expenditure, as it were, because all of us were aware that the budget, there were budget cuts, but also there was a redirecting of funds to the COVID-19. But also, if there we have not closed the gaps that have a potential of encouraging officials to mismanage the public funds, as it were, Chair. Other than that, Chair, I think I'm happy. And of course, we are looking forward to say, are the systems now geared and oiled not to repeat or encourage the offenders to repeat themselves, even other officials, to see a possibility that there's still a room to do any naughtiness, as it were, if I may use that light word, Chair. Other than that, Chair, thank you very much. And we're looking forward to meeting other departments and the progress in some of the issues that we have raised, Chair. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Sommer. Can I now invite Honorable McGlue? Honorable McGlue?
Yeah, thank you so much, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, when it comes to the Northwest Province and issues of the Northwest Province, my heart really bleeds. My heart is bleeding because I'm coming from the Northwest Province. And we have seen a number of developments in the Northwest Province. We are now today faced with information on various disciplinary hearings. And it's also a very sad day for the community of the Northwest and also the country, that we are now also presented with some of these cases of the Premier's office, of which the Premier himself is not in good standing with his party and also under discipline. This is really a sad day for us. And pertaining to our report and also the developments and the constitutional duty of the Premier of the Northwest, one would like to see that he is rightfully so honor his constitutional duties. I'm saying this because when the Premier was under suspension, one of the decisions that has been taken is that the leader of business in government, and the chief will give guidance as far as the operation is considered from his side. So I'm going to say later on what is presented, why I am saying this. And one of the core questions that I would like a specific response is from the Premier, as and these reports of the disciplinary hearings and cases, is whether the factionalism within the Northwest Province has bear any effect on the departments. Safe to say that the Premier has been sent there to deal with the issues, and it has not happened. Within the Department of Health, there was for quite a number of time an absenteeism of the chairperson. There were no chairperson. We are also aware it was a level 5 lockdown. There were actually a break when it comes to the Department of Health. But my problem here is, chairperson, and I am in possession of a document that I really would like to send to you as the chairperson, and for us to consider with other departments and other provinces to deal the same. And likewise, when the Premier's department appear before us, we should also ask the portfolio committee to sit in. My problem that I'm facing, and you know, we are representing various political parties, and we are also sit in various study groups, co-joint study groups, national and provincial. And I want to say that there has been a report table on cases of disciplinary cases, and that report to the portfolio committee being tabled by the MEC, there is no correlation with what is presented to us here today. There is discrepancy, and I'm going to speak to it, and I really would like that we have answers on those. And I want to join Honorable Lisoma in the question of people that are being redeployed. If you look at this report, there is no consistency in this report. And there's also a complete a lack of progress. How is it that someone has been found guilty, owe 52,000 rand, back in office, and they deduct money? And if you look at all the other cases, there is a dismissal. Money is money, whether it's a 10 rand been stolen or whether 30 million rand has been stolen. So the Premier's office really have to deal with that inconsistency. So there should have been some kind of a wish list or a bucket list saying that the portfolio or departments should act in this in this manner. I want to speak to a certain Mr. Bill Redlinghuis. The report submitted in November 2020 was that there was a disciplinary action against this Redlinghuis individual. And also, he's been redeployed. He's within the very same department. But if you look at this report now here, there's no case where Redlinghuis has been disciplined. It rather says that the report is ongoing. So to a certain extent, someone has mispresented a report to the Premier's office or to the portfolio committee or towards Parliament. So when it comes to this relocation of cadres within the organization, it is difficult, and it creates more and more problem for us to deal with this. So I think this is the issue that we need clarity on when it comes to the Redlinghuis issue, and also as far as that case is concerned. I want to go to the Department of Health, to Lekalaka's case. At the time, I was a member of the Northwest Provincial Legislature, and we set for the whole day. Up until the next morning, 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, we call in the police. The former chairperson of SCOPA, Matlakeng, we call in the police. There's a case on this. Why is it that there is no reporting from the premier's office as far as Lekalaka's case is concerned? Why is it? And I'm not too sure whether this Setswa Bang is also the spokesperson of the previous premier. There's no criminal case. And again, I want to refer to the redeployment and the factionalism within the organization that is to the detrimental of this province. How is it that this department did not have the decency to go to the police and open a case? And how is it that this department is, the financial department is getting it right, which is direct under the premier? Why is it that they are getting it right to get someone in to say, pay off? I mean, it is such a serious offense. So I would really ask for indulgence, Chairperson. I'm very happy to send that report. I'm very happy. There are cases on one day, just a second, I just want to get it, on one day whereby a marathon of individuals has been suspended in the Department of Health. It does not surface here. The manager of the pharmaceutical services, the chief director of tertiary specialized hospitals, the deputy director of pharmaceutical service, as well as the director of capital planning. All of them, there's hearings. It is not in front of us. So when it comes to study groups, when it comes to that correlation between various parties in various spheres of government, it happened under the GA. And that's why I'm coming with this information, and I'm happy to send it to us as a collective to have a revisit of what is being tabled in front of us. Because what has been tabled in front of the portfolio committee at the time is not the same that has been tabled in front of us now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Maloman. Honorable Maloman, take the floor.
Chair, she did indicate, my apology is not to raise my hand, she did indicate to me that she will be driving. It's just that I didn't make that apology, but we might be losing her. Thank you very much.
Okay. So she is not in at the moment because of the network problems.
Yes, Honorable Chair.
Okay, so we will skip that question from her. Let me officially.
Sorry, Chair.
Okay.
Sorry, Chair, my hand was up. Maybe this IT thing is not reflecting on your side, but I did use the
guide. It is reflecting. You have not raised the hand. But anyway, take the floor. Take the floor.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry, Chair. On my side, the hand is there, but I'm sorry if it's not reflecting on your side. Safe to say, Chairperson, what's going on here? Most of the questions that I've jotted out down here has been covered, but I wanted to put a rider on the recouping to say
why are we stuck with recouping? When does a person that has misappropriated a government fund fired? Why are we stuck with recouping? Maybe is there a guide or a policy that says we only recoup? Or do we have maybe the measurements to say from so much to so much we recoup, but over this it's then you are then fired? The suspension, yes, that one was covered by Honorable Gibby. But again, in terms of prolonging cases, what guides the department when a case has been lodged? What is the deadline? What guides the department? Is it just a hallelujah thing? It can take as long as it can. Is there any policy that guides us? It guides the department in terms of a lodged case to say, here is the case, within such a time this should be done, and within such a time this should be done. Because for me, this thing of prolonging cases is also disrupting the work of government. A person is suspended. The case is taking a hallelujah years, and the person is being paid. One other thing, I think Comrade Gibby covered me on that one to say. One other thing. What is it that is pushing the departments or pushing government to pay a person that is suspended on such a case? Or it's the constitution that says you are up until you're proven guilty. Chairperson, I'll be as short as that. Oh, okay. The last one is the vetting. Can I check if really department do vet employees whenever there is a post? Because I think that one can also assist on what Comrade Honorable Lesoma has asked to earlier on, the recycling of employees, to say if you were vetted, it will pop up to say you are the one who has messed in other departments. Now you are coming this side. Now, what mechanism is done? Do they undergo any vetting before employing somebody fully? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Honorable Nduli. Let me first of all thank the whip of our committee, Honorable Lesoma for making sure that we do acknowledge the new members of the committee in the form of the minister and the deputy minister. I want to now add to that to officially welcome the deputy minister who was here with us today, Deputy Minister of Public Service and Administration, Honorable Dr. Chana Majake-Pillay. Welcome, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Bilali Majake.
Yeah, Bilali Majake, sorry. I twisted your name. Welcome. It was just an oversight. It was not deliberate. But I want to once again thank Honorable Lesoma to make sure that we do that officially. Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thanks, and good morning to all members on the platform.
Good morning, DM. Good morning.
Morning.
Can I now allow the Premier to respond to all the questions raised by honourable members?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. And let me deal with the question regarding recycling of officials. Certainly, it is something that we do our utmost to ensure that this does not happen. Admittedly, it has happened in the past. And I will just urge the DG to ensure that any further recycling that might be happening should be treated accordingly. But in terms of our monthly and quarterly reports, these matters must be reflected. Payment of service providers is a matter that we report on a monthly basis. Whereas the national policy is 30 days, over the years, we have tended to make it less number of days than 30. And on the whole, I think our performance has been good. Reduction of funds, I would not be able to respond in the details that may be required, but I think it is common cause that as a result of the outbreak of COVID in the past year, we have had two, in an unprecedented fashion, two budget adjustments. And the result thereof, I think, will be reflected in the audit report that is currently, the audit process is currently underway, as honorable members have actually completed, as far as I know, so that when the audit report comes out, that is the audit report of 2020-2021. With regard to matters of party discipline in respect of the Premier, I would request with the greatest respect that those matters are sub judice and they should be best handled at party levels. It was not clear what the Honourable Member was referring to with regard to constitutional duties, but it is a matter that certainly is recognized. It is inconceivable to see and expect any official, political or administrative, especially political, not complying with constitutional duties. The question of the chairperson of the Department of Health, I think it is noted, and the legislative arm of government of the state is dealing with that matter. The question of disciplinary cases, there being no correlation, I would, with respect, Honorable Chair, at the appropriate time, request the DG to respond to that, that there is no consistency. Some are paid, some are allowed to pay back, and others are actually dismissed. And as I respond to these matters, I think it would be useful just to find out what arrangements there have been between the DG and the administrator in respect of Section 100, because the reality is the accounting officer is still the administrator, and there are a number of the issues here which would be helpfully clarified further, in addition to what I'm saying, but I'm sure the DG would also help us out. The question of riddling haze is a matter that has been raised by the honourable member, and I would ask the DG to respond to that. The matter of Dr. Legala-Gala, I think it is common cause, and we do report on that, that the necessary actions have been taken, that he was charged with fraud and financial mismanagement, a measure to recover the 30 million lost to Mediosa, was a preservation of his pensions, and such has been done by the specialized tribunal. Summonses were issued to recover these monies from deliberations by the Department of Health with the SIU. Investigations must proceed to see what other assets apart from pension may be realized for additional recovery of the lost state's funds. With regard to Mr. Sichombu, he was subjected to a disciplinary process which extended over a period of about 3 years, and at the end he was found not guilty, and consequently he has returned back to work. Honorable Chair, with your permission, I would request the DG to respond to the point made by the honourable member about a marathon of managers suspended in the Department of Health. The DG will also explain in more detail about why we are stuck with recouping. I think it is a matter raised by Honourable Malumani. The prolonged cases, and I think a case in point is that of Mrs. Trombo, which has taken for a period of about 3 years. And incidentally, the case of another senior official who was similarly charged around the ICT matters did conclude and he was dismissed. The question of payment during suspension, I think, is a legal matter. It's a matter that relates to both the Constitution as well as Labor Relations Act. It would be useful for the DG also to respond to that. The vetting process, Honorable Chair, has become more and more robust based on the experiences that we have had in the past. And in this vetting process, the recycling of officials is also handled very, very effectively. I think these are the questions and comments that I'm able to respond to. And with your permission, if we could ask the DG to fill in the gaps, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Premier. The DG may take the floor, please.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Chair, I think where the presentation did not meet the expectation of the members, that must be understood within the context of the letter as received from the committee, Honorable Chair, that the presentation focused on financial misconduct, and therefore we followed the process and format as prescribed by the Public Service Commission. And that which is not in the report would be influenced by the initial understanding of the letter from the Portfolio Committee. And that is why we had then taken the trouble, after discussing with the Secretariat, of supplying supplementary information to plug the gaps which are in the report. So to the extent that the report is limited, it is because of the format that we adopted that we needed to present on financial misconduct. And we'll improve moving forward, Honorable Chair, to make sure that there is effective communication between ourselves and the Secretariat, and when need be with the Chairperson, to make sure that the presentation meets the expectations of the committee in future. Chair, let me deal with the issue of recovery. Recovery happens on the basis of having to go to court. And very frequently, the recovery involves an employee and a third party. Let us assume it was a supply chain management issue where somebody is overpaid or was granted a tender which was not supposed to be granted to that particular person. The department goes to court, or if the SIU was engaged, the SIU would refer the matter to the tribunal. And once that process has kick-started, Chair, it is then outside the boundary of the accounting officer, because then it involves the judges and magistrates within the judiciary. And therefore, that process, the longer it takes in accordance with its own procedures, Chair, would be beyond the control of the accounting officers. And that's solely the reason why it takes longer, because then it has to follow the judicial process, which is beyond accounting officers. I can assure honorable members, honorable chair, where financial misconduct is involved, the AG will also pick up that financial misconduct either as irregular expenditure or wasteful expenditure. That's how they classify it from the audit point of view. And that amount would remain in the annual report and financial statements of the department until a satisfactory explanation is made on the recovery. So it's not lost to government. AG wants to convince himself that everything possible in the planet is done by accounting officers and departments to recover the amounts that are recorded as irregular or wasteful expenditure. So those are the mechanisms, Honorable Chair, that can give comfort to honorable members that it is not only this presentation that we make to you and everybody's out of the hook. No, it isn't. Processes do follow in terms of recovery with the audit process as well as the annual reports of departments. And the PFMA and Treasury regulations are very clear on what needs to happen to what is classified as irregular or wasteful or fruitless expenditure. Chair, the other issue that is raised by members is, why is it taking long for departments to finalize disciplinary cases? Now, once again, Chair, once a presiding officer and a prosecutor, let me put it that way, have been appointed it is also another process which is beyond the accounting officer. Because all the accounting officer can do is to remind and make follow-ups so that people must speed up the cases. But the process happens outside the control of the accounting officer, in the sense that once the accounting officer gets too much involved in the matter, it may compromise the case itself. Because principles of fairness, of equity, comes into play in disciplinary hearings. And I think a typical case has been mentioned in the presentation, where somebody during the course of the disciplinary proceedings gets ill for some unreasonable period of time, everybody's hands gets tied because the process cannot be completed. But we remain worried as well, Honorable Chair, about these delays. And in our discussions in the Office of the Premier, we said we must put back on the table creating capacity for the provincial administration to have people specifically designated to deal with this matter, so that we don't appoint people outside the department. We're looking into that issue, Chair, and hopefully that would make a positive impact in terms of the turnaround time of completing disciplinary proceedings within a short space of time. Chair, I think the Premier has dealt with the issue of the suspension. When it happens, it has to be with pay. But I must also report, Honorable Chair, that in June, at the meeting of all the HODs, which sits on a monthly basis, we took a decision that once the disciplinary proceedings have started, HODs must consider recalling those people back to work, because we expect at that time the investigation has been completed, evidence has been secured, and therefore those people must come back to work. If they cannot work at their previous positions, they must be put in the meantime in other positions where they can be gainfully used by the department. Of course, each case will depend on its own merits, Honorable Chair, because we need also to be sensitive to the perception of the public. Just to give an example, if somebody has been accused of stealing 2 million and is suspended for 60 days and is back on duty, you know, perception can easily be created that government is condoning corruption. So we need to be sensitive to its case when we take that decision of taking people back from suspension so that they can be gainfully employed. Honorable Chair, the issue of suspensions happens at two levels. On appointment, so criminal records, those kinds of things. And once it comes positive, only then can you be appointed. But for senior management, there is another second level that is employed to vet you through the SSA to make sure that we have a 360 degrees knowledge of whether you can be trusted to remain on the employ, what are the vulnerabilities that you may have in terms of your conduct and so forth, so that we know what you can access and you may not access in the public service. So there is a policy on that. It's being implemented. Chair, the other issue was the payment of service providers within 30 days. Whilst we endeavor to do our best in this regard, Chair, most of the time, the invoices that are submitted to government are not genuine from service providers. Whilst you may have a contract that is being implemented and payments are happening at various stages, sometimes service providers want to take chances and claim what is not due to them. What then frequently happens is that a dispute arises between the service provider and the department. And therefore, once a dispute arises, we can't count the 30 days. 30 days is counted only from the day in which the invoice is certified to be correct and in accordance with the contract. So we try our level best that where, you know, a valid and certified invoice is received, it's paid within 30 days. But there are those that would be longer than what is required. Chair, I think the other issues that were raised would, I would leave it to the DDGs to fill the gaps in the specific matters. But as a province, we have many matters I can record, Honorable Chair, and we may want to do another supplementary report to you where we supply you with criminal cases that have been opened with the subs, as well as case numbers where we are in court. Just to give an example, Honorable Chair, the matter in the office of the Premier of another chief director there who's been dismissed, we went to court, we terminated the contract through the High Court, we got an order. The company that is involved has appealed to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and we're waiting for the outcome in relation to that matter. So we do follow-ups on these matters, but like I said, our presentation was limited because of how the request came, and therefore we did not provide some of these issues, but we may cover all of those with a supplementary report indicating the case numbers and at what stage is each matter in terms of the recoveries, because in any event, Honorable Chair, in terms of the PFMA and the Treasury regulations, we are obliged to recover government money spent when it was not due. Thanks, with your permission, Honorable Chair, I would request that the DDG fill up the gaps of what I may have left out. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, DDG. You may take the floor.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Premier, and DG, and Honorable Members of the Committee. In terms of my notes, Honorable Chair, I believe that the responses as received have covered my notes as I have listened to the questions by both the Premier and the DG. Thank you very much.
You. That concludes the item on the Premier of Northwest. Can the next item is the report of the Public Service and Administration, presentation rather. Can I now invite the Deputy Minister of Public Service and Administration to make her opening remarks before the presentation is made. The floor is yours, Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. It actually gives me a great pleasure to become part of this team again that I've been part of in the past, and to continue to appreciate the work that the committee is actually doing. I'm not going to be saying a lot. What I just want to do is just to introduce the subject of discussion today, and I will then hand over to Dr. Fatmak to actually make a presentation to this committee. And to say good morning again to all members on the platform, good morning to the Premier, and good morning to all officials. The DG of the department has actually requested me to submit her apology. She has a meeting with Treasury at 11 o'clock. She was on the platform earlier, but she has just left to go and join the meeting that she's supposed to have with Treasury. So this morning, from the Department of Public Service and Administration. We will be briefing you on the progress made on the establishment of the Public Service Administration Ethics, Integrity and Disciplinary Technical Assistance Unit. May I then hand over to Dr. Vermaak to present to the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, DM. You may take the floor.
Thank you. Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Deputy Minister and other high-ranking officials, all protocols observed. Chairperson, do you see my presentation on the screen?
Yes, I can see it, and I suppose if I see it, all other members can see it as well, but I can see it on my side.
Thank you, sir. So, sir, let me then start to brief the portfolio committee. I've been asked to provide inputs on the progress made on the establishment of the Public Administration Ethics, Integrity and Disciplinary Technical Assistance Unit, which I will just refer to as the unit, and then its success since being operational. The overview of my presentation, I will focus on the progress made as requested, the successes then since being operational, this is now the past year, the challenges and then major focus areas or plans that we have until 2024. Now, Chair, just to bring the portfolio committee into the picture, the Public Administration Management Act in 2014 made provision for the establishment of this unit, but the Public Administration Management Act was not, it did not came into effect because there was no regulations adopted, and that was the prerequisite for the Act to become effective. So it's only on the 18th of March 2019 that the President issued a proclamation to establish this unit, and then it became effective from the 1st of April 2019. Now, in terms of the Public Administration Act, it has very clear functions, and briefly, it's the technical assistance and support to be rendered, norms and standards to be created, especially around ethics, integrity, conduct and discipline, to build capacity, especially on discipline proceedings, proceedings into misconduct, then to strengthen government oversight, to promote and enhance good ethics and integrity, and also to cooperate with other institutions. Now, as you will see here, there is no mandate to do any investigations, but through the cooperation with other investigations, there is scope to actually assist with investigations then that is required. And also maybe just to mention that in terms of the Protected Disclosures Act, the regulations to that, this unit is one of the entities that a protected disclosure can be made. Now, to look at the establishment of the unit, as indicated in 2014, the PALMA became ceded to, but not already in effect. So from 2014 to 2019, the focus of the then Chief Directorate Ethics and Integrity Management was to establish anti-corruption and ethics policies. And that is mainly policies on gifts, other units of work, conducting business with the state, establishing of ethics infrastructures, whistleblowing, and the conducting of lifestyle audits. And that was established in 2016 with a revised public...
Can you hold a bit, Dr. Vermaak?
Yes, sir.
Can you hold a bit? I don't want to keep the Premier and his delegation for too long. Honorable Premier of Northwest, if you are free to leave if you wish to leave the platform, because
thank you very much. We
are through with you now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You can come back again, Dr. Vermaak.
Thank you, Chair. So the focus in that area was in that period was to get the ethics and anti-corruption policies in place through the public service regulations that were revised in 2016. And in that time also the DPSA and the Canadian government concluded a strengthening of ethics and integrity project, which it was agreed that they will provide technical assistance and only technical assistance to the DPSA when establishing this unit. So if we look at the establishing phase when it was now proclaimed in April 2019 to March 2020, Mr. Robert McBride was appointed on contract to establish this new unit. And the immediate focus was to integrate the Chief Directorate Ethics and Integrity Management with the Directorate of Discipline Management so that it forms the new unit and it also has a focus on discipline. Then also to develop a strategy which in main focused on addressing the issue of corruption in the public service, but also the second focus to strengthen departments so that, and that is through the ethics committees and the ethics officers, so that there's a bigger impact when fighting corruption. Then also to adopt the work plans that's aligned to the strategy, to integrate the budgets and to reorient the personnel. Now, in March 2020, the unit was formally established and that was now through the macro restructuring process of the DPSA. And it was agreed then that the unit will be incubated within the DPSA. Two directors were officially appointed in March 2020. The unit was appointed in October 2020. And by January 2021, this is now this year, the last employees who were formerly under the two directorates were now received letters of appointment to the unit. And then also the two vacant director positions were advertised and we appointed a director for monitoring and evaluation. And shortlisting is currently underway for the director discipline management post. This is also a re-advertisement. And then just to give you a sense of the budget that we have in 2020, our budget is 8.8 million, of which 90% is for the e-disclosure system, which is also the backbone of our lifestyle audit system.
Sorry, Dr. Fermat, can you hold a bit? I see Honorable Soma's hand is up. Excuse me for that. Can you hold?
No, Honorable Chair, it's an earlier hand. I will use the opportunity when we engage. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for that. Thanks.
Sir Mark, you may continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. So on this slide, you will see the organogram of the unit. It consists of three directorates, where the first one focuses on norms and standards, the second one on monitoring and evaluation, and the last one on discipline management. You will see that we are 10 people in total, 6 male and 4 females, and in terms of senior management, 2 males and 1 female. Then you will also see in terms of the Public Administration Management Act, the specific functions that I've mentioned, and I also indicated here under the different directorates, the specific functions that the director there will be responsible for. So in terms of the unit's plan and targets, it's aligned to the 2019-2024 MTSF priority one target, a capable, ethical and developmental state, and also the priority identified by the Minister for the Public Service and Administration as the fight against corruption intensified. Now, I've indicated that the strategy in the beginning is to look at the corruption and the involvement of public service employees in corruption, and then secondly, to strengthen the departments in the fight against corruption. And that is in, reflected in the targets that we've included for the unit under the MTSF and the ministerial targets. You will see the first one is to program a program to institutionalize professional code of ethics in the public administration, where we work very close with the National School of Government. Then the issue of lifestyle audits, and then the resolution of reported incidents of corruption in government. Now, in this sense, because the unit does not have an investigative mandate, the unit provides support to the law enforcement agencies who do have the mandate, and we assist them by identifying the public service individuals in those cases, and also then to monitor if those cases, then if it's a criminal case, if there's also then a disciplinary case opened at the departments to follow up on that. And then also the last one is to ensure the functionality of the ethics structures, and that is now the ethics officers and the ethics committees so that we can strengthen departments to fight corruption and also to build ethics and integrity. The key strategic priorities for the unit is based on what I've indicated, and there we have a database on public service employees appointed as board members to entities compiled, and we monitor that. We support the implementation of lifestyle audits in the public service, which commenced from the beginning of this financial year. We conduct analysis on the adherence of designated employees to the financial disclosure framework. And then also we have a program to improve the management of discipline within the public service and to refer then reported corruption cases to SACS and to monitor from a discipline management perspective. Now, Honorable Chair, to come to the successes over the last year, the first area that I want to highlight is the area where we focused on fighting corruption and especially public servants involved in corruption. And I indicated that we do not have a mandate to investigate, but we look and focus on strengthening oversight and also to cooperate with those institutions that do have a mandate to investigate. And as I indicated, we adopted policies between 2014 to 2019. One of that was public service employees involved in doing business with the state. So via the Fusion Center, which is the center that results under the anti-corruption task team that involves a number of agencies like the Financial Intelligence Center, the National Prosecuting Authority, SAPS, and so they actively look at targeted cases reported so that it can be addressed in a collaborative way. And through the Fusion Center, then this unit supports the SIU, the FIC, AG, I can indicate, and also SASA in the ongoing investigations into criminal activities that involves public service employees, especially then in PPE, UIF, and SRD grants. And what the unit does is we verify the appointments of these individuals to make sure that they are public service employees, because the parcel is not always updated, and because of that, we don't always know if the people then identified are actually public service employees or not. We received a name list of 10,100 employees involved in UIF and SRD grants fraud that we are looking at. It's about 120 departments. And what we do is now to liaise with those departments to indicate to them these are the people that's involved and to make sure that there's been disciplinary steps taken whilst there's the corruption charges investigated. And then also to indicate in September 2020, we identified 490 public service employees conducting business with the state, and we handed the name list to departments, the SAPS and also the NPA to take further action. 17 priority cases were identified by the SAPS for investigation, and the NPA enrolled one case now in court. This will be the first case for the crime that the newly formulated crime of conducting business with the state, as is mentioned in the Public Service Act, in the Public Administration Management Act. And I can indicate that when we started, there was almost 10,000 public service employees. It's now down from 490 in September 2020. It dropped to 96 in June 2021. When we confirmed the information on the central supplier database with the data that we have on PASOL. And what we've noticed is that most people, they also, corrupt people always have a backdoor to look at how they can change the scenery for their own benefit. And we found now that most of the people move to target loopholes in the beneficial ownership part where they then either do criminality through the name of a family member or a spouse or so, and that is something that we are looking at now. Then also to indicate that the unit is actively sharing information with the AGSA, especially to support their reviewed mandate. And this is especially regarding the employees conducting business for the state and employees performing other remunerative work, and also on discipline management. We also received a number of reports made to the Minister for the Public Service and Administration involving corruption and so. And then we referred 10 cases to the Public Service Commission for investigation, which include alleged corruption, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, nepotism, and also where some departments do not follow HR processes. We also referred 3 corruption cases or alleged corruption cases to the DPCI for investigation, and also 1 case to the AGSA. And all of these cases are still under investigation, and we follow up on a monthly basis to assess progress. The second part of the successes is where we did not look at the corruption area, but where we tried to look at norms and standards, values to bring back professionalization to the department. And we do that through strengthening the internal mechanisms to deal with ethics and corruption. And that is where we provide technical assistance. We set norms and standards. We do capacity building and also monitoring and evaluation. So the first part on technical assistance is where we developed a number of guides to guide the public, to guide the departments, and especially the ethics officers, to be more capable to do the work that will impact on fighting corruption, but also on building an ethical environment. One of those guides were the guide to manage other remunerative work in the public service, to make sure that people don't use the process to do business with the state. To procedure to access and use the e-disclosure system, a guide on managing lifestyle audits in the public service, a guide on managing discipline in the public service, and then a directive on further categories of employees in the public service to disclose their financial interests. So this directive was important so that we can get more people on the e-disclosure system to disclose their financial interests. And then we also provided inputs to the public administration management regulations, especially to address lifestyle audits. To build capacity, the unit held continuous awareness sessions on the code of conduct and the guides that we developed, and also the directives and determinations, and especially focusing on the ethics committees, and also to address issues where there's still no clarity around other remunerative work, e-disclosure, or employees conducting business with the state. In terms of lifestyle audits, 42 ethics officers were trained from the 3rd to the 4th of May this year on the risk-based verification of financial disclosures. And that is the first part of lifestyle audits, which is lifestyle reviews, where the ethics officer must actually verify very deeply the financial disclosures disclosed by officials. And this training was done with the assistance of the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime and the World Bank. In July 2021, we had awareness sessions that we conducted on the guide to implement lifestyle audits with all provinces, and also the identified crucial national departments and components. Then, with the support of co-author Sojima, an implementing agent for the Government of Canada under the Strengthening of Ethics and Integrity Project, the unit is now finalizing online courses so that we can enable ethics officers and also departmental investigators to conduct lifestyle audits and lifestyle investigations as part of the lifestyle audit process. And it's a range of courses that will form one training activity where the public, the ethics officers can access that on an online basis, and then also refer regularly back to that so that they can keep on retraining themselves. The rollout is next week Friday, is the first course, and thereafter we will start rolling it out to the rest of the ethics officers as well. Then also we conducted a number of ethics officer forums, of which we will also have next month under the Public Service Month, a special dedicated ethics officer forum, where we will also look at discipline management specifically, but also on lifestyle audits and conflicts of interest. I can also mention that in 2020, we trained 204 public service employees in an accredited PACITA course for presiding officers, chairpersons and initiators to also assist with the capacity building of departments to then have capacity for discipline management in the respective departments. This was facilitated by the human resources in the DPSA, and we plan a similar intervention this year. Then also I can indicate that we are developing training programs around the guide on discipline management so that we can strengthen discipline management, especially looking at precautionary suspensions and also to address the cost of precautionary suspensions and unnecessary discipline management action. We also look at monitoring and evaluation, as I've indicated, especially to identify trends and also to determine whether there's technical assistance required. And this we do on a monthly basis. Although we look at it on a monthly basis, we produce four oversight reports at the end of the month of the year, so that we have a compendium of activities for the past year, which we can then use to determine strategies to intervene in terms of technical assistance for the next year. The first one is the statistical reports on conducting business with the state, where we monitor monthly whether there's an increase or a decrease, and then involve the departments where we see that there's challenges. The second one is the direct, where we look at the implementation of the directive of other remunerative work, to monitor if those employees are receiving permission to do other remunerative work, if they got approval, and then attach that to the e-disclosure system when disclosing that, and also to confirm that those employees are not actually conducting business with the state. We also have a report regarding compliance with the financial disclosure framework, to make sure that there's compliance of SMS members, but also other categories with the e-disclosure system. And in 2020, the disclosure rate for SMS members in total for national and provincial departments was 98, and MMS members 60%. This is also one of the areas that we will focus on to improve, because 60% is not enough, but we do have a strategy in place to address the improvement of MMS. Then the last report that we have as a yearly report is the annual discipline management report. And I thought to share with the portfolio committee in quarter three of last year, 2020-2021, the DPSA embarked on a project where we had discussions, the minister had discussions, one-on-one discussions with those ministers and provinces who had long overdue suspensions. And that was followed up by workshops from the DPSA with those departments and provinces, and also followed up by the DG, who addressed in provinces and specifically then singled out discipline management as one of the topics to address. And we found in our analysis then that as a result of the intervention in quarter three, there was a decrease in suspensions and the cost of precautionary suspensions, as well as an improvement in the capturing of cases on PERSOL. At the end of March 2021, we found that provinces finalized 78% of their backlogs. One, you can see on the screen that in quarter one it was 1%, and that increased to 78%. The national department's cost for precautionary suspensions also stabilized around 20 million per quarter, and the cost for precautionary suspensions in provinces decreased to a new low level which is almost 25 million less than what the year started with. Quarter one, it was 87 million compared to 62 million in quarter four. With the support of the unit, the two provinces that had the most precautionary suspensions also reduced their backlogs, where the Free State reduced their cost from 12 million in quarter three to 6 million in quarter four, and KwaZulu-Natal managed to reduce its costs from a high of 92 million in quarter three to 21 million in quarter four. The unit also, on a monthly basis, monitor compliance to the following: the newly established database of public service employees sitting on boards of state-owned entities, to monitor against existing databases to assess if these employees are not conducting business with the state in a private capacity. Then, apart from the work that the unit is responsible for in terms of the Public Administration Management Act, we are also a member of the Anti-Corruption Task Team, and there we have certain responsibilities, and the most prominent one, apart from building capacity that we do and work that we normally do per day, we also coordinate international work, especially that required for international anti-corruption instruments and conventions, such as the OECD, the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, G20 and BRICS. And what we do there is to coordinate country inputs, participation in international peer review assessments, assessing policies for shortcomings, and to address findings made during peer review assessments for South Africa. In June this year, the unit supported the United Nations Special Session on Corruption and coordinated participation in two events. The one called Enforcement is the Key, and the other one, Global Law Enforcement Response to Corruption during COVID-19. So we are also arranging international youth arts competition under BRICS to raise awareness in, amongst the youth on corruption. Then also we play a role in to support the National Anti-Corruption Strategy, where we represented on the steering committee, and we are, as a part of the group, responsible for contribution towards the implementation of the strategy as per the implementation plan. And this is especially regarding whistleblowing and the implementation of lifestyle audits. I'm nearing conclusion, Chair. The challenges that I can indicate is that the completion of the macro restructuring of the DPSA took a bit longer than expected, and that also impacted on the establishment of the unit. And the proposed structure of the unit was not approved by National Treasury. And due to further budget cuts, the posts of the unit were also terminated. Although we filled the remaining posts, and we left with still two more positions to fill, the Director Discipline Management and Director Deputy Director Monitoring and Evaluation. In total, we will fill 12 posts for this unit. Then we also had a challenge with poor information management, especially where departments do not capture data on PASL. We have to double check information captured also to see if those information reflects the truth. And because of that, all the information has to be verified and analyzed by hand. This is time consuming. It impacts on the ability of the unit to identify trends, weaknesses, and to also assistance needs, technical assistance needs, and to respond to that quickly. We are currently developing electronic databases, with a focus on developing a central information system for the unit so that it's easier for us to cross-reference data and to identify trends, weaknesses, and assistance needs. But this is also budget intensive, and it's also time consuming. We also had, in the beginning, no formal cooperation mechanisms between us and the role players in the anti-corruption and the ethics field. But we are concluding MOUs and agreements with the Financial Intelligence Center, Special Investigating Unit, the South African Police Service, National Prosecuting Authority, and Auditor General South Africa. We already have MOU with the Financial Intelligence Center and also agreements with the South African Police Service and National Prosecuting Authority, and in the process of concluding MOU with the Auditor General. We also reached agreements with the Public Service Commission and the DPCI so that we can refer relevant investigations to them. The last slide, Chair. The major plans from 2021 to 2024 is still to focus on what we indicated in terms of our MTSF and ministerial targets, where we will focus on addressing corruption through the means that we have, and also to look at building the department so that there is a bolster against corruption of public service employees. We will look at technical assistance to address the professionalization of the public service, where we will look at improved implementation of our policy, such as conducting business with the state, performing other remunerative of work, discipline management specifically, and also to implement lifestyle audits. We will also focus on strengthening the ethics infrastructure, especially the ethics committees and ethics officers, but also looking at whistleblowing mechanisms and the protection of public servants blowing the whistle. Then also improvement of discipline management, especially around capacity building and addressing outstanding precautionary suspensions and the costs associated with it. And then in terms of corruption, to refer cases that's reported to the DPSA and to follow and to make sure that departments follow through with disciplinary steps, and also to address all the identified policy loopholes, especially on concluding investigations. We will liaise with the SIU and with the other agencies to identify what is the policy gaps that we can address, so that we can address loopholes, and especially looking at beneficial ownership. And then also to synchronize the three levels of the public administration, that is now public, the national provincial departments, but also local government sphere, to establish norms and standards on ethics, anti-corruption, and discipline management in the implementation thereof. Thank you, Chair. That is from my side.
Thank you. May you remove now the... Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, the presentation is now open for discussion. Can members want to make a contribution do so by show of hands in the platform? Honorable Soma, take the floor.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and allow me to welcome the presentation, which is it's very encouraging. It flows very well with the first item that we're dealing with. But I must say, Chair, on a lighter note to Honorable McClure, that we didn't stop and stand where you left us. We have moved, and I'm sure you can see that. Having said that, Chair, if I may, I know some of the questions would have been answered indirectly, but I would like just to ask some couple of questions. The first one, which is important because it has been in the public space, and I think at a committee also we did raise that. It's just that I can't remember how did we close it, or we asked the ministry or the department to look at it. There has been a case this year with Tegwini vis-a-vis employees around the lifestyle audit, and there has been a court determination on that, which seeks to suggest that legally speaking, they are not obliged or we don't have a legal standing, as it were. I'm not too sure whether it's only under municipality or not, but I know that we did ask the department just to look at that and look at its implications with our area of operation, as it were. Through your good self, Chair, if not today, because there's still a homework and I still have to get that article and which area exactly and what informed the court so that I can share with the department. If they can look at that, but notwithstanding that, I must reconfirm that we are still committed to do the lifestyle audit, as it were, which will appreciate the guideline. But in terms of the challenges and all that, I think it has been covered. For now, it's a work in progress. Besides the need of institutionalizing the professional code of ethics in the public service, has the code itself been established that can be shared with us? Thirdly, Chair, are the employees appointed as you will recall before I even finish my sentence here or my thought on this one, which is the third question, Chair, is that we are also eager waiting for us to oversight in our area of operation as the portfolio committee on the SOEs and other government entities. As it were, so my question would be being mindful that we are not quiet yet there. Are the employees appointed as board members to entities only those two that represent the specific executive authority in their capacity as shareholders in government entities, or employees appointed in their private capacity and not representing government? And of course, I know that are we doing lifestyle audit, noting that they would have received a written submission from the executive, from the EA, for them to looking for a better way to moonlight in a way. Because in the latter case, is their main employment not affected then? And I'm sure that the EAs would have checked that. And make sure that there's a very clear close performance monitoring, as it were. But in terms of this ethics, I think is something needs to be responded to say what are the checks and balances on ensuring that people that don't end up asking their subunits to do what they are getting paid in government and they focus on the other side executive functions as members of board and so forth. The fourth one, Chair, what would be the strategy or what is strategies in place to ensure full compliance with the financial disclosure over the medium term, which you may link it with the example that I made with the Etegwini municipality court case that we may borrow from. Sixth one, Chair, has anyone among employees subjected to disciplinary procedures by the unit thus far? And the case is referred to the law enforcement. I would not necessarily say SEPs, but I'll say law enforcement agencies for criminal procedure being terminated or recovery of monies involved in such cases, as it were. Around the ethics officers, how many ethics officers are appointed per department, or does it depend on the size of the department, as it were? Because there's a bigger area that we need to cover in this space, Chair, and I'm raising that question around that. After this, Chair, so that I can pre-book myself on this one, after we have concluded this one, I would like to raise and make some suggestions based on the first presentation that we received from the Northwest. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Soma. I don't see any hands on the platform of members who want to raise questions. Therefore, I will I will hand it back to the department to answer the questions from Honorable Lesom.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Maybe to respond to Honorable Lesoma's comment on the Itikweni versus the departments. We are aware of the newspaper clipping. It was sent to us, and we looked at the issue. The issue that's addressed in that newspaper article is pertaining to municipalities. And in terms of the municipalities, I'm not aware of any legislation that allows lifestyle audits. But in terms of national and provincial departments, we do have legislation. It's in the regulations, public service regulations. Regulation 22 provides that the HOD can, through its risk management process, introduce lifestyle audits. And that is also very in line with POPIA, where Section 2AI of POPIA gives effect to Section 36 of the Constitution to provide that the right to protection of personal information is subject to justifiable limitations. And then Section 61C2 provides that the POPIA is not applicable in instances where personal information is required by a public body for the purposes of the detection, prevention, investigation, and prosecution of criminal offences, and so forth. So we did look at the issue of the legality of lifestyle audits, and in terms of the public service regulations, the guide that we've developed, it's a legal process, it's a tool to assess wrongdoing, and in that sense, we're going to look now at the municipal level to see whether there's information or legislation that will also allow lifestyle audits in the municipalities. But for national and provincial, it's definitely allowed. Then Honorable Lesoma, in terms of the code, if a code of conduct was established, in terms of the public service regulation chapter 2, there is the code of conduct for public servants. The whole of Chapter 2 in 2016 Public Service Regulations. I can share that with the Portfolio Committee. It was reviewed in 2016, and we're already busy reviewing it again because of technology. There's a lot of loopholes still around the use of media and like Facebook and Twitter and that, and that is still not covered in the Code of Conduct. Then also regarding employees appointed as board members, in terms of Regulation 13C, members of the public service are allowed to be board members if they are representing government, but not if they are representing themselves or their own benefits. If they do it in that way, then they need to request permission to do other remunerative work. But then the provision is that they are not allowed to conduct business then with the state, that entity that they sit on the board, because that would be then a criminal offence. The strategies that we have in place to make sure that there's full adherence, especially for MMS members, to the financial disclosures, it took almost 7 years for senior management to move from a very low level of compliance to 96-97%. And with the MMS, we're already in the second year and we are standing at 60%, which is quite good, but still not what it should be. So the focus of us would be to identify those departments that's struggling, that has very low MMS level compliance, and then to engage on a one-on-one basis and to then provide them with the necessary skills to comply, but also to address it through compliance programs in the department and advocacy and awareness. The disciplinary procedures, the DPSA, so far this unit has not been involved in any disciplinary proceedings against other departments or units. We have availed members of our pool to become presiding officers, but we have not been involved in taking over the disciplinary proceedings of other departments. In terms of the ethics officers, it does depend on the size of the departments. We have around 340 ethics officers in place, but Honorable Chair, I must also indicate that these members are not appointed, they are designated. So they also have other work besides the work as ethics officers, and it's a lot of work. And based on that is why we decided to focus on making the work of the ethics officer a lot easier by providing them with not only guides, but also with posters and material, and so that they can use for advocacy and awareness. And this is the focus of next month in the public service month, where we will then support ethics officers and provide them with communication details on the challenging aspects in departments. I think, Honorable Lesoma, I've addressed all your questions. I think there's one that I missed, which I can't recall now. It's something about systems. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Lesoma, can you remind him about the question that he missed? About systems.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chair. Probably because some of the questions were indirectly responded to at during the presentation time. But just safe to say that one was asking whether is it embedded within the normal workings of the system. But the way he has responded last question, it does indirectly talk to that. And I'm covered because it says that they've got their substantive jobs that are supposed to be doing. So this one is it's additional one. So which means there will be no overlooking on their substantive jobs, as it were. It will balance. So I was saying that, are there any system to check the balances so that the substantive job doesn't suffer? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Soma, can I give you, before we go to the next item, to give you the platform again to raise what you wanted to raise?
Okay, no, thanks very much, Chair. And I highly appreciate your patience with me. Thank you very much. I had my hand earlier on because I wanted, before we concluded the Northwest issues, just to make recommendation before you make a summary in that agenda item, to say that we might need, Chair, to have that standing meeting with the law enforcement agencies, because if we were to follow immediately thereafter, after we engaged, had raised, would not have it way, but I'm not gonna deal with the team as coming join the ACE. Deployed of being members of the legislature in any provinces that we might be engaging in the near future, that when we invite the Premier's officers, probably we might also look at the idea, whether is it not ideal also to have a joint portfolio committee of the legislature and the province, so that we can cross-check the information, not saying that we are suggesting that the Premier's office and the departments at a provincial level might mislead us deliberately so. But I think probably it might work that way, because not all committees, provinces are represented in this committee. So we might not necessarily rely on our service members here that we will cross-check the information and then raise those issues. Probably we might even ourselves be wrong, but because there's nobody to back up and confirm what we are saying, then it might be taken as gospel truth. Hence, then my suggestion is that moving forward, probably we might just apply our minds to say, how could it be? I know COCTA does that. We have the joint portfolio committees of the legislature and ourselves. It will have the if you recall, thanks administration, we need to have the lessons of Section 100 instead of
You are breaking up, Honorable Soma.
Those interventions post. The picture or the performance of a government at a provincial level or of a department be worse off after we have put the administrator and also subjected the province or the department to Section 100 as it were. I know that it mainly is under COCTA, but our departments, I think even NCOP does deal with that, but precisely because we oversight on DPME work also, it might be of benefit to us so that we can suggest what mitigating factors, whether it's because of the laws, but I doubt, and what where does it go wrong is the issue of training, then NSG can fit in there, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Lusoma, the Honorable Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a closing remarks. To say that what we actually working towards is to actually manage to successfully as a country, as a government, deal successfully with corruption. What's most important is really to finally have a unit that is fully capacitated for fulfillment of this mandate. The work that they've got to do is a lot, beginning with the training, awareness of managers, and also just mainstreaming of this mandate across government. But also it's not just mainstreaming, it's about also developing tools that are going to actually manage to be utilized for monitoring. Because at the end of the day, there's got to be some kind of impact to a clean government or governance, which will actually lead to clean audits. And I imagine along the way, there will be a big role for not only for law enforcement officers, even for the auditor general in terms of the kind of tools that will actually have to be utilized to be sure that it's really clear and proper monitoring. And also how these tools will be responded to would be something that will be of utmost importance in order for us not to find ourselves in a situation where we just continue to do work that doesn't actually boil down to anything. Because what's important at the end of the day is really once and for all managing to deal with corruption, which is actually eating up a lot of money of the state that is meant to develop and advance the lives of people of South Africa. And once we can be successful in this, it will actually manage to help the country to move forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. Maswale, can you present the last item, which is the report on the desirability?
All right, Chairperson.
Yes. Can you present?
Thanks, Chairperson. What I will do, Chair, is that I will flight the report. Members were finished with the report last Friday, page by page, and then we will then adopt, Chairperson. Let me look for the report. Okay. Okay, I am uploading it now, Chair. Can you see Chairperson from your side?
I can see it.
Like I said, Chairperson, the report was sent to members last week, and this is just a standard template indicating that the bill was received to the committee, and then subsequently a thorough process was followed in dealing with the bill up until our last meeting, Chairperson, where the committee felt that the bill was not desired. I'm on page one, Chairperson. Basically, the introduction. This is attendance register of the last meeting, Chairperson. And then I'll move to page two, Chair, which roughly has also just objective, Chairperson, of the bill and the presentation which was done by Honorable Kruger. Then on page three, where we allow the presidents to come in and present as well. And then we also allowed on page four, the oral submissions to present as well, Chairperson. And then on the last day, Chairperson, the committee deliberated. That's on page four still, Chairperson, and on page five. And then continue to page six, Chairperson, where the motion of disability on the bill, Chairperson. Thanks, Chairperson, over to you.
Thank you. Can members now indicate by show of hands the adoption of this report? I see Honorable Lusoma, followed by Honorable Kibi, Honorable Malomane, Honorable Ntuli, in that order.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks, Masi, for taking us through in terms of the spirit of the report. Before we move for the adoption, Chair, if I may, on point eight, the last second last line, I'll read it, Chair. Furthermore, comma, the bill objects seek to address the red tape experienced by small businesses. I'm not too sure whether it should be one business or small businesses. I'll suggest that because they are many, which could be addressed by the relevant committee. I hope it does make an English sense in terms of the... It's just a minor amendment, Chair, to that line. Thank you very much. I'll allow other colleagues then to speak to other issues. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Former. Honorable Kibi.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And now I move for the adoption of the report with the corrections from Honorable Lusoma. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable,
thank you, Chair. Good morning to everyone. I'm seconding with the amendments that have been made. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. I was offered a view of the adoption. Chair, has it just been adopted and seconded? Thank you.
Honorable Schreiber.
Morning, Chair. Thank you. Chair, I'd just like to ask that there be one addition made in the final section, just to note that the DA does support the desirability of the bill, if that can just be noted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think that will be noted. And then
Honorable Lesoma,
I see your hand is still up, Honorable Ntuli. Honorable Lesoma. Honorable Lesoma, come in. Honorable Lesoma. Have we lost you? Honorable Ntuli.
Sorry, Chair, but on my side, it's say lower. I don't know what's going on.
Honorable Soma, come back. Have we lost Honorable Soma?
Yes, Chairperson, I do not see her on the list. Oh, there she is, Chair. I think she's having a network issue, sir.
Yes, yes. Honorable Soma, come back again. These are the difficulties of having missing.
Chairperson, can the host, yes? Can the host re-accept her? Can the host, Chair, through you, can the host re-accept her?
I think the host is trying to do that. Do that, Maskole, whoever is hosting.
Ms. Lesoma is back, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable Lesoma, take the floor.
Okay, my apology, Chair, is beyond my control. I really apologize for that. I was suggesting, Chair, having listened to Honorable Stryper's edition, is that I'm not too sure whether is that is going to be captured, that the DA or a reserve is right or is going to be included there, because I think that it's a committee report. And of course, if it comes to it, it should be a majority report, as it were, just to double check so that also we comply with the protocol of writing such reports as much.
You are right. Hello. Okay, Maskole.
Thanks, sir. Sorry to come in like that, sir. Dr. Kheiba's comments will be captured in the minutes of today, Chairperson. However, the report will remain as it is, to say that the committee decided that the bill is undesirable, Chair. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, that's my understanding.
Chairperson.
That's my understanding. I see Honorable Schreiber wants to come back again.
Thanks, Chair. I'd just like to confirm this here, because the report could easily state that the majority view of the committee is that the bill is undesirable, while still noting the minority position. That is standard practice in many of the other, in fact, in all of the other reports that this committee submits. So I don't see why there can't just be this space made available. I don't appreciate the idea that the voices of minority views or dissenting views are somehow being muzzled here by what Honorable Lesoma said. It's a very simple thing. The DA has a view that differs from the rest of the committee, and it can be captured as such without changing the decision by the committee.
Chair, Honorable Ntuli.
Ntuli.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think in simple terms we are saying here, that was the presentation of the report of the deliberations of the committee. we are not deliberating today. That is the report of what we did. But I think Maskole is quite correct to say the minutes of today will reflect what Honorable Schreiber has alluded to. Thank you, Chair.
You are correct, Honorable Ntuli. The minutes will reflect that, but overall, the report is adopted by the committee. Honorable Soma, I see your hand is up again.
No, Chair, your summary properly covered the point that was...
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Soma. The network was not so good with you today, Honorable Song.
Yeah, the professor.
Honorable members, we have now come to the end of the meeting. I want to thank you all for your wonderful contribution to the work of this committee. The meeting now stands adjourned.
Chairperson. Chairperson, let's thank God Honorable Soma was involved in the accident yesterday.
Yeah,
let's
she
thank
told me.
God's miracles that she is with us and really nothing bad happened to her, but she was involved in the accident.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, she told me, I forgot, maybe I'm getting old, I don't know. She told me in the discussion this morning, Honorable Soma, I should have put that to the meeting. We are happy though that you escaped that accident unscathed. We are happy for that.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Now the meeting stands adjourned.
Thanks,
Chair.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.